Thank you so much for joining us on WDRT 91.9. This is Christina DeRocher here with Paul Rattay, the skeptical naturopath. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Christina. How are you?
I'm fabulous. How are you?
Great. The weather's very nice.
I know.
That makes things always better.
We're coming on spring. So we're going to talk today about refined vegetable oils, a topic that is actually on a lot of people's minds these days, I would think.
Yeah, I think it's been on people's minds for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole lipid hypothesis thing, right? You know the lipid hypothesis. I've talked about that.
Yes.
Well, you eat fat, and fat, specifically saturated fat. You eat saturated fat, increases your cholesterol. Increasing your cholesterol, you die of a heart attack or you die of cardiovascular disease. So as we draw that out, we say, oh, well, don't eat saturated fat. Keep your cholesterol levels low. You'll live forever.
Right.
Well, not forever. You know what I mean. But
you'll live better.
Cholesterol is a risk factor. I'm not denying that. It certainly plays a role in this. The question is, how much of a risk factor is it? Is it 80%? Is it 10%? Is it 2%? Right? Like smoking and lung cancer. Right? Mm-hmm. Pretty clear link there. And we've never done a randomized controlled trial on smoking.
Really?
Well, how are you going to do that? You're going to randomly assign people to one group, the smoking group, and another group to the non-smoking group. So you're going to take people who wouldn't smoke and you want them to smoke.
Oh, right, right.
So we don't have that data.
Right.
Totally unethical. So we have to take people that already smoke. Now, understand, they may smoke because of other things that are going on in their life, or they may have what we call healthy user or unhealthy user bias.
Okay. Right?
So, for example, maybe people that smoke have really high stress levels, and maybe they eat a lot of bacon, right? Or whatever. They eat a lot of McDonald's. So there's all those things that go together, right? So how do we tease out that it's the smoking piece?
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, we don't have clear data on that, but we have certainly observational data that is very suggestive that, you know, smoking plays a role in that. And I would say smoking and lung cancer, that is a stronger correlation. I don't know that that's the right word. Causative effect than eating saturated fat and cardiovascular disease. My opinion. But mm-hmm. If you eat saturated fat, you increase your cholesterol. You definitely increase your LDL. That's the bad cholesterol. And it increases your risk from a cholesterol level. But anyways, that's been around since the 80s, yes?
Yes, right.
Or, well, I mean, kind of put forward in the 60s.
It's making its way back around with what you would call maybe new fats, because now we're, you know, everybody's hyping up the avocado oil, and, you know, we're starting to question again, what is the best oil to cook with, I think.
Right. And it's always like, is there something brand new and shiny?
Mm-hmm.
There's always like, oh, avocado oil or coconut oil, right? So coconut oil was maybe what, 10 years we're on the coconut oil thing, right? Coconut oil is still around, right? It's kind of like, and it's nothing new, but somehow it's like takes front and center and we focus on it for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, like, kind of like whatever, paleo, maybe not so popular now, but keto, carnivore,
the right? Flavor of
plant-based. Yeah. I mean, all these things. And they kind of get recycled over and over and over when you look at the popular diet books. But anyways, refined vegetable oils is, you know, I think we want to take a look at that. And, you know, to put it kind of simply, it's kind of old fats versus new fats,
mm-hmm.
right? And so we've got these new fats that we never used to eat, that we didn't have. They weren't available to us in, let's say, 1900, right? The early 1900s is when we developed the technology, right? Food science. And remember, do we trust food science or are we skeptical of food science? Based on the name of the show, you probably know what I think about food science.
You're skeptical.
I'm skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
So this refinement, right? So now we're taking something, in this case, a plant fat, right? Because there's this idea that, well, plant fats are better than animal fats. So if we can get oil from a plant fat, that would be beneficial.
Right.
So early 1900s is when these kind of more refined vegetable oils make an appearance.
And do you know the history as to why we started doing that? Was it simply because we were growing more corn and soy and we needed a way to utilize?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I wonder that we developed the technology because we had in mind what we wanted to do, or was it the technology was sort of developed and then we had the ability to do something? I'm not sure. Right? I mean, I've talked about this with kind of finely milled flour that's in the like the 1870s in the Twin Cities. They had General Mills and Pillsbury were able to finely mill flour. So there was a purpose to that because now they were able to use, I think it's soft wheat, don't quote me on this, but they're able to use a source to start making bread and turn it into cereal and turn it into Bisquick and use it for all sorts of different things instead of just like, oh, we're just going to grind the wheat and make bread from it. I mean, that's what we've been doing for thousands and thousands of years. Right. And then all of a sudden, now we have all these different forms that it can take. So that's the 1870s, let's say. But vegetable oils weren't around then. Well, vegetable oils. So what do I mean by vegetable oils? I'm asking you. I'm a teacher.
I think of safflowers. I think of corn and soy. And I think of all the, I mean, walnut oil.
Yeah, walnut oil. Coconut oil.
Avocado.
Right. Yeah. So those are plants. And think about it in olive oil. How long have humans been able to produce olive oil?
You know, it seems like it's been around forever and ever because the Italians and the Mediterranean.
The Greeks. And
right, right.
Why?
Because that's what was growing there?
Well, yeah, but corn was growing here. We grew corn in the Americas.
But olives are oilier.
Ah, yes. So you can't get away when you put an olive in your mouth. You're like, wow, there's a lot of fat here.
Right.
You can taste it.
Yes. Yes.
Do you do that when you eat corn?
No.
Like, wow, there's a lot of fat in this corn.
No, definitely not.
Do you
not.
Eat edamame, right? Soybean. Do you eat edamame and say, wow, this is really fatty?
More than corn, but less than olives, I would say.
Yeah, somewhere in that range, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
So, in other words, avocado, right? Lots of fat. You can taste it.
Right.
Yes, it's the mouthfeel.
Coconut.
Coconut. It's like all, I mean, it's all fat. You get that mouthfeel thing.
But sesame, again, not so much.
Not so much.
No.
Well, maybe a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So the nuts are going to have more fats in them than corn and soy.
Right.
Corn and soy, you know, basically soy is not a grain, it's a legume, but corn is a grain.
Mm-hmm.
So we're turning a grain into fat. It's not a nut or a seed. Nut or seed makes sense. Coconut, olive, you know, this type of thing.
Right. Walnut.
Walnut. And there's just more fat in that. We know that. You eat a peanut, there's fat in it.
Right.
Anyways, so that's vegetable oils. Right? So again, there's this impetus to say, well, there's something wrong with animal fats. Now, understand, this came about in the 50s. Ansel Keys was the epidemiologist at University of Minnesota who really kind of pushed this forward. And interesting enough is he got laughed out of conferences when he started this hypothesis.
Because imagine the history behind that. Everybody's families were still being born and raised on farms, right? And using the rendered fat when they're making the bacon and using the butter and churning it themselves. I can absolutely imagine him being laughed out.
Yeah. So, but then he kind of pushed forward on that and found, you know, certainly links between this, right? What we call observational data between eating higher fat in your diet and higher, you know, rate of death or death from cardiovascular disease. But understand, like I said, there's some problems with that, as I already said, when we compare one culture to another culture. So if we compare we look at the United States diet and we say, well, it's really high in fat. And we look at the Japanese diet and it's really lower in fat, right? There's just not a lot of fat in the native Japanese diet, what they eat, because they aren't raising cows.
Correct.
And they don't have a lot of pigs.
And fish are not the fattiest of the meat.
Correct.
Either.
And they're going to eat kind of all kinds of fish, right? There'll be some fish that are fattier and some fish that aren't as fattier. It's just, there's just as not as much fat provided by the native Japanese diet. So we compare those things and we say, oh, well, they're healthier than us because of the fat. But are they healthier than us because they don't smoke, actually? They may smoke more than we do, right? But I'm just saying there's other variables that go on in that. And understand that eating more fat in the United States may be associated with other things, like, for example, having more money. Or, for example, you know, just that's what's available to us. Maybe it's cheaper on some levels, right? So that, you know, just the availability of the food to us, so we ate that. Right. And and again, we're a culture that's based on, I mean, came to the United States and dairy, right? Dairy was a big deal. Actually, it wasn't originally a big deal. I just did this. I was at Sparta. What county is Sparta?
I don't know.
I should know. It's like not Charles County. What the heck? Anyways, I'm there, and we visited the museum and found out that the farmers here weren't raising dairy to begin with.
What were they raising?
They were just raising wheat, and I think it was wheat, so mainly wheat. But then they found that it wasn't, that I think maybe there were droughts happening, and understand that wheat is easier crop to grow than raising cows. Cows, you got to milk every day.
Mm-hmm.
There's more hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
Can't be lazy. You actually got to work. You plant wheat, you're like, well, I plant it, I let it go. I sit in my hammock and watch it grow, yes. I don't know, but it was very interesting to me to have this conversation about, oh, wow, I thought dairy was always there. It wasn't.
Interesting. Interesting. Hmm.
But anyway, so the whole idea, though, is you could have a cow. Like, you yourself could have a, your family would have a cow, and you would live off the byproducts of the cow. Right? Mm-hmm. Milky White, you're not going to kill Milky White, you know, Jack and the Beanstalk. You're going to...
Yeah.
Until she stops, until you can't milk her anymore, then you're like, well, now we're screwed.
Right.
Right. Or having chickens, same kind of thing. But those are fat sources, right? Eggs, milk, this kind of thing.
Right.
Anyways, that's a bit of what is a crux of our, you know, what we, how we feed ourselves, right? We're different than Japan. But anyways, I digress on the lipid hypothesis. So this lipid hypothesis is now saying there's something really bad with these saturated fats, and we need to replace it with these polyunsaturated fats, which really, I'm not going to say they didn't exist, but not in huge numbers before 1900, right? I mean, how much olive oil did we eat in the United States in 1900?
Yeah, can't imagine with...
Not many olives grow here.
Right.
If we're living in Italy...
California, maybe.
California, right? There's a Mediterranean climate there, so they'll get olives. But if you're living in, you know, Wisconsin, how many? There's no olives growing around here.
No.
Grapes, maybe a little bit, but no olives. So we have to import it. So it's coming from somewhere else. And if you're importing a food, it's always going to cost you more.
Mm-hmm.
So olive oil just wasn't really prominent because it doesn't grow here, right? We didn't eat olives. We drank milk. We ate butter. We used cream. That's what we had available to us immediately in our immediate geographic surroundings. Right? Coconut oil? Are you kidding me? There's no coconuts here,
no,
yes?
Right.
So those vegetable oils, again, if you're living in the tropics, you're eating a lot of coconut oil.
Mm-hmm.
So again, based a bit on your geography and your climate. So again, there's this drive that we want to we want to eat the Mediterranean diet. And it's interesting. I mean, I have nothing wrong with olive oil. I mean, olive oil, like I said, has been around for a long period of time. And I could make olive oil in my kitchen.
Correct. It's
oily. I could get
it's
a screw press.
And, yep.
I'd probably just squeeze it and get it out there, yes?
Yeah.
But you could make a screw press and easily use mechanical force and get olive oil.
Correct.
Yeah. And coconut oil, I think you can extract very easily, too. I don't know. You heat it? Do you heat it? I'm trying to think. But coconut oil is really, you don't have to heat it very much where it starts to turn liquid. But I think that that's another one that you could relatively be, you know, straightforward on how you get that. So this becomes part of the definition. So again, just to use olive oil because most people know about this. So extra virgin olive oil, right? So extra virgin olive oil, that means something when you see that on a bottle.
Mm-hmm.
It means it's a first press, and it means it's not refined. It's not refined by definition. So basically doing some kind of screw press or some kind of manual mechanical pressing thing, and then that first press, that's considered extra virgin olive oil.
So now, the most organic and the least refined.
Well, not necessarily organic. Organic has nothing to do with how it's extracted. Organic has to do with how it's you know, what it's sprayed with.
Well, right. I guess I meant an organic process rather than a lot of maybe chemicals added to it in order to extract.
Right. Interesting. So could you have an organic, quote-unquote organic oil that still has solvents used in the extraction method? Can they call that organic? I mean, I honestly, I don't know that.
Right.
I have to probably do my due diligence and figure that out. Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, so extra virgin olive oil means something. I mean, so organic extra virgin olive oil means that, you know, that's how it's raised or what can be used on the crop and how we've extracted that. Yeah, so again, that's been organic. It's unrefined, right? Unrefined. So the refining is now how much more of a processing do we need to do to be able to extract the oil from that plant?
Correct.
And again, olive oil, easy peasy, right? And do it in our kitchen. How about corn oil?
I imagine it's a much more laborious process because of the lack of oil in the corn itself, how much you have to use. And
but if you even have if you have a lot of corn and you just get a little bit of oil from a lot of corn, we got a lot of corn, yes?
Right.
So we've got that little bit of oil really adds up with corn. Plus, we could figure out a way, the food industry knows, this is agriculture, or not agriculture, the food processing, that they're able to take that corn and they're going to say, okay, well, I'm going to extract the oil from it because that's one use from it. And then I have the rest of the corn available. And, oh, I can maybe
put it in pet food.
Right, whatever. I can make packing peanuts with it, right? There's all sorts of uses that I have for that. And you're like, wow, we're using a food substrate as a packing peanut? And then there's people that are, hungry, and there's, poverty and malnutrition and this kind of thing. And we got packing peanuts that you could eat. I told you that.
You did share
this
one.
That my son and I have actually eaten a packing peanut, right? Certainly not food grade. And maybe we were playing a little bit of Russian roulette, but we're still alive. So
how long ago was that?
Maybe that's a good question. So
keep an eye on you.
Maybe they'll be after me. But anyway, see, I ate it, right? Because they dissolve. It's made of cornstarch. So it's going to be much more laborious. I can't get a screw press. I can't get corn oil.
In your kitchen.
In my kitchen. I can't do it. So I need somebody else to do it, and I need somebody that's smarter than me and has some technology.
And has access to an incredible amount of corn.
An incredible amount of corn, and then they develop the technology, right? So this is then the refinement, right? So the refinement is, how do we extract it? Do we heat it up? Do we use chemical solvents like hexane or what's acetate? I can't remember, but they'll use solvents to help extract it. And understand, that's what they want, right? I mean, they want to say, hey, there's some oil here, and it's really in our best interest to get all of that oil out.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be very efficient instead of me just taking a piece of corn and trying to squeeze it to get any kind of oil out of it, which you're not getting. And keep in mind, that's the same thing with olive oil, too. A screw press is probably not as efficient as using solvents to extract it.
Mm.
So the question is how efficient do I need to be? Or in other words, you could also say, well, I have the extra virgin olive oil, which is the first press, and then we'll still take those olives and send it through again. And then that's the virgin, it's the second press, and then the third, fourth, fifth, then that's pure or whatever terminology is that's used for that. So it sort of by definition, then when does it become that it's a refined oil, or when did they start adding heat or solvents or something else to do this?
Because that's your definition of refined.
Yeah, well, refined means it's not purely just a mechanical process, right? So again, we tend to use the word cold pressed. Yeah, so cold pressed means it's not heat pressed.
Mm-hmm.
Right, we had this talk about what does cold pressed mean? When we say cold, what does that mean?
I used to think it meant refrigerator.
Yeah, like 40 degrees. Yeah, 45 degrees. No. Like avocado oil, we say cold press if it's under, I think, 113 degrees.
Amazing.
Well, wait, that's pretty hot. Yeah, but it's not 180 degrees. So the whole idea is it's cold. Cold is a relative term.
Right. And that's a marketing scheme to me, it seems like, because how would you know that unless you did your research? It's not like it says it on the package.
It doesn't say it. It says cold pressed. But that's a definition we use, but then you have to look up the definition. This is always a problem with things like, let's define our terms, because we need to be clear about what we're actually talking about here when we throw labels around.
So I'm going to take a break here, and thank you all for listening to WDRT 91.9. You're listening to Paul Rittay, the Skeptical Naturopath. Paul has a yearly cycle of lectures called Obstacles to Cure. The next one is on Saturday, April 8th, and it's about toxins. Not all toxins come from the outside world. It's from 8:30 to 10 in the morning on Saturday, April 8th at the Commons on Jefferson Street. There'll be a Q&A to start off for the first half an hour and then an hour-long lecture about toxins. Thanks so much for listening.
Great.
And it's free, by the way.
Yeah.
This cycle.
Toxins. So we'll talk about that next month. Yes. Yeah? So, I think that this show airs after, right? So we record it before, but it ends up being after the time. So
we've now, why, do you buy the idea that plant fats are better for us than animal fats because of the cholesterol connection? You seemed skeptical. Is there a place for plant oils?
I think so. So again, I think it's what have we, so my bias is that I tend to trust what humans have been doing for thousands of years.
And I could be wrong.
I just don't have a lot of faith in food science that has now figured out ways to extract and reduce and do this kind of thing. And I'm not saying there's not benefit there. I think that that's partly how we can feed a growing population by the way that we've fortified and that we've been very efficient with extraction methods, right? Those are just examples of, you know, food technology kind of allowing the population to grow and grow and grow, right? So we could debate that for quite a period of time.
I know, that's where I get skeptical, because then I say to myself, quantity versus quality. And I say it's good that we're able to feed the entire population, but I go back to, what is the quality? Do you really think that plant oils are
equal? Yeah, what is quality? Quality is like you're alive. Yeah, I mean, really, if we're talking about it, like, when did you die? If you're still alive and you're walking wounded, or quality of life's not there, but is my quality of life degraded because I'm eating refined vegetable oils? I don't know.
And I mean, there's lots of literature out there right now that says that you are.
The seed oil hypothesis. Yes. So that's 2018. I'm very well aware that's put out there, and it's not even it wasn't a trial. It wasn't really original research. It was basically just kind of an editorial.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what it was kind of based on. And again, I mean, I think the lipid hypothesis was the same way. So now we just have a seed oil hypothesis.
Okay,
do you understand that?
So is this the equivalent of opening up the magazine that says blueberries cure cancer, and the next month you open it up and blueberries cause cancer? I mean,
yes.
It doesn't seem like there's any real rooting in...
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Why do we disagree all the time? I mean, we can't agree on anything in nutrition.
Why?
Yeah, why? Because there's conflicting evidence. If we actually look at the evidence, and keep in mind we have to qualify or... We need to look at what type of evidence. I use smoking as the example.
Right.
Right. So we use epidemiology. We use observational data to determine that smoking is bad for lung cancer. And I think that's true, but we don't have an RCT, or a randomized controlled trial, where we do an experiment and we blind people and we randomize them to one treatment or the other. That's the best way to go about this.
And it's not possible, not ethical with smoking.
Not with smoking. So do we do that with vegetable oils? Yeah, we do have done that with vegetable oils. But understand, now we're doing a diet trial again. Right. And we've talked about this, just problems with diet trials.
So many variables.
Yeah. And you're free living. And that means I'm going to tell you, don't eat this, to eat this. And I'll give you the food. Right. We'll provide you the food to eat to do this. But do you actually do it?
Right.
And then we'd still say, well, just be honest. Tell us if you did it or not. And then you may be honest, you may not be. I mean, we're humans. We're not robots.
And if you're honest and you say you didn't, then what do you do with the data at that point?
Yeah,
right?
Well, you're just trying to get the data, right?
Yeah.
That's what the researchers care about. But when we start talking about where people have free choice on what they eat, it becomes problematic. You know, it's just harder to maintain, especially in an affluent culture where we have lots of choice.
Right.
I mean, if we're living and we have the choice of four foods to eat, then it's not such a big deal.
Correct.
But they've done some studies on this. Actually, back to Ansel Keys, they did the Minnesota Coronary Project. I think that's what it's called, coronary, where they did it in an inpatient environment. So they did it with people that were in an inpatient, you know, mental hospitals kind of thing, and had them... randomized to one group or the other, and so they provide them either butter or, you know, saturated fat, or then they gave them polyunsaturated fats. So they did this. So they were able to do that because they got all of their food in the inpatient setting. So that was a clever design,
yeah,
to try to control that. And, you know, they did this in the 60s, and it was thought to be, we're going to, like, prove this once and for all. And it didn't. We didn't see that. But then they ran into problems, too, because there's also the transition was away from having people in the inpatient. We want to get people out of patient. We don't want them in the hospital.
So at the same time,
they're starting this trial, and there's a movement from the government to say, hey, we don't want to institutionalize people. We want them out there, and we have drugs that we can use to treat them so they don't have to be here. Well, wait a minute. Now I can't run my experiment because you're messing it up.
Right.
I need those people where I can control what they eat.
Wow.
But it's just really difficult.
But say something about the results. You said it didn't end up working out.
No, it didn't. We didn't show that to be true. And that was that's a big thing. It was not published for a period of time. And then it was published, and there was some suggestion in, I think, of the elderly that there was some correlation. But they were actually doing, like, I don't know if it was CT scans. It wasn't CTs. But they were actually looking at the, like, on autopsy, what was the degree of atherosclerosis. So they were taking care. I mean, they were really covering their bases to try to see that there was a link between this. And they really didn't see anything strong.
Hmm.
And so that's kind of been revisited. I think it was revisited like five or longer than that, maybe 8 years ago. I can't remember, where they're starting to say, now, wait a minute, this was never published. And if this had been published, maybe this would change our view on the lipid hypothesis. But again, this is just one trial. And it's really difficult for me to just take one trial and say, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have some other trials that show that exchanging saturated fat for polyunsaturated fats is beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
But not all. But then again, if you look at these trials, you look at it and you say, well, is that the only thing they changed? In, for example, in one that I do know, I think it was in the Virgin Islands. Where did they do this? I can't remember. It was called the STARS trial. They did this and they substituted, you know, butter and things, and they put polyunsaturated by margarine, basically. But they also had them increase fiber in their diet. So now you're already changing a few variables, right? Because you're saying, okay, well, we're trying to take somebody that's had cardiovascular disease and try to reverse it. So we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And then it's really hard to tease out which one was really the quote-unquote culprit, right?
Yeah.
Or which one was the stronger.
Or which combination.
And keep in mind, that's reality anyways. I mean, cardiovascular disease isn't just cholesterol. Cholesterol plays a role in it. Blood pressure plays a role in it. Stress plays a role in it. Obesity plays a role in it. Right? There's all these things that contribute to it. We just don't know how to tease it out and say which one's more important. I mean, from my perspective, you can imagine that I get really interested in making sure your blood sugar is normalized and that your weight is normalized. I think if you do those things, that a lot of other things, improve from that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's harder work, right? It's really easy to take a blood pressure pill.
Yeah.
Or, you know, even just say, I'm going to take magnesium because it's going to lower my blood pressure. Well, maybe, maybe not. But anyways, right? Or lowering cholesterol as well.
We want the quick fix.
Right.
Should we avoid oil altogether? That's another aspect.
Right. So we've got this refined oil. So, and again, we know that trans fats are a bad guy.
Okay.
And so trans fats have been a bad guy. We know this. And where did trans fats come from?
The industrial food
it's just a byproduct of food industrialization as well. It's when we have partially hydrogenated vegetable oil. Fully hydrogenated vegetable oil does not have trans fats. It's the partially hydrogenated.
Okay.
So that's a byproduct of this oil industry, the oil refining industry. They had trans fats. And trans fat on a label, they may label it as trans fat, but, 50 years ago, it may just be labeled as a polyunsaturated fatty acid. You'd be like, oh, well, that's a good guy. Oh, wait, that includes trans fats. Oh, we have to tease out the trans fat. Oh, the trans fat's a bad guy. Like, mm-hmm. We know that that's probably, like, everybody agrees upon that. But again, that's a byproduct of food industrialization, right? So again, my skeptical nature is to say, oh, well, okay, is that it? Or should we just stay away from any food industrialization overall?
Right. That would be my bias too, honestly. Steer clear and just, because you're talking about people who want to make money off of food. You're not.
Yeah, right. Their motivation, completely different, mm-hmm. right? What's their motivation? Is it health?
I don't think so.
They'll use health to help them sell product, but it's efficiency, it's shelf life, it's these kinds of things, yes? And that's how they're going to make money. I mean, we live in a capitalistic society. We're that's our reward. We're motivated by profit. That's not bad, but we can't separate the motivation is a good thing.
No,
right?
I totally agree. It's just in which capacity in your life is that going to be the focus? And
yeah,
in health, I would say that's a very low rung, is to, eat things that are supported by this idea of capitalism, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's more important to know your farmer and to build healthy relationships with where your food's coming from and
choice, right? So we do have that choice,
mm-hmm.
but then you have to, and that's hard work though, yeah? So, I mean, these are kind of like the rules of engagement. What do you do with these refined vegetable oils? But anyway, so the trans fat, bad guy, right? We know that. But they're from vegetable oils, right? Partially hydrogenated vegetable oil. Mm-hmm. So the trans fat's bad, but what about the vegetable oil that's carrying it? And again, from corn, from soy, from whatever it is, right? So we just say, oh, it's a trans fat. As long as we remove the trans fat, we're still fine. I'm still like, well, wait a minute. This whole processing thing, I bring into question as to say, is that a problem? And part of the issue with that, or the seed oil hypothesis, is that it increases inflammation and that it increases oxidative stress. And so oxidative stress is basically, you know, damage to cell membranes that can become kind of repeat that and really trigger damage in the body and eventually like kill a cell per se, right? This is free radical biochemistry here. But antioxidants, right? Oxidative stress versus antioxidants that would protect that.
I see.
And that's a little bit simplistic, right? Because actually there's free radicals that are good guys in the body. Like if we have a bad cell, we want to produce a free radical and kill a cancer cell. Like that's a proper use of a free radical. Mm-hmm. It's that we don't want a free radical to attack a good cell. Like how do we know that? Can mm-hmm. we discern that? Oh, this is really messy.
Yeah, sounds yeah. like
but,
it.
But anyways, it's all about, you know, sort of balance there. But the whole idea with fats is, so the idea of oxidative stress or free radicals, right? That we cause more oxidative stress when we heat an oil. So it's oxygen, light, and heat mm-hmm. are things that will destroy an oil mm-hmm. or destroy pretty much everything, right? So those cause oxidation. So in other words, if you heat an oil, you eventually damage it. You make it go rancid, right? You do that in your kitchen. You take olive oil and you're going to stir fry with olive oil. What's going to happen?
It's going to
You're
going to
get
smoke.
A smoke. You're going to smoke, and that's a rancid oil. And if you taste that oil, what happens? Burns in the back of your throat. Like, hey, this is a problem. Mm-hmm. Like, this is poison. Yeah, and you did it in your kitchen. You did it. This wasn't the food industry.
Right.
Like, they made it worse. You yeah. made it worse because you went beyond the smoke point.
Okay.
Right? So
yeah.
that's heat. Right? Oxygen plays a role in this too, right? If you expose something to oxygen, it's going to start to oxidize.
Mm-hmm.
So heat plus oxygen is a bad combination, right? If we think about, you know, flaxseed oil, for example. So how do you buy flaxseed oil? Flaxseed oil is a pretty fragile oil, right? So fragile meaning it's easily oxidized. How do you buy it?
I don't know, actually.
It's in a dark bottle, so it's an opaque bottle, so no light hits it.
Uh-huh.
It's in the fridge, cold, and it is nitrogen packed.
Oh.
So they suck out the oxygen and they put it in nitrogen until you open it. As soon as you open it, now you've got oxygen in that bottle. So that top layer of fat is going to be in contact with oxygen and it's going to start to oxidize that.
Mm-hmm. So use it within a certain amount of time.
Yeah, or, you know, you just skim off the top. I don't know. It's just, it just those are the things that cause flaxseed oil to go bad.
Hmm.
That oxidized flaxseed oil, right? It's oxygen, it's light, it's heat. And that's flaxseed oil, right? Flaxseed oil has beneficial properties, but it's very unstable. And what makes a flaxseed unstable? And flaxseed is not saturated fat, right? So saturated fat, think of like butter, think of something that's hard at room temperature, right? Or solid at room temperature. That's right. Definitely, you know, kind of the definition of saturated fat, but it's the chemical bonds that are in there,
mm-hmm.
or the what we call the double bonds. So a saturated fat has no double bonds in it. It's a straight chain molecule. It solidifies really easily. No double bonds. Flaxseed oil is an omega-3. Well, it's a combination of things, but it has a fair amount of omega-3 in it, right? So omega-3s, good guy, fish oil, right? So omega-3s have more double bonds. That's the definition, right? They have more double bonds. That's what makes it an essential fatty acid. Flaxseed oil, I think, has three. Is it three or four? Boy, I'm, you know, hopefully none of my students are listening to this. I forget how many double bonds. It's three double bonds in flaxseed oil or in the alpha-linoleic acid. So those double bonds are really susceptible to oxygen, light, and heat. Because what it does is it kinks the molecule, right? So saturated fat is a straight chain molecule. Whereas when you put a double bond in there, it does this.
It bends it.
Kinks it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so what happens? That structure is different. It takes up more space, right? This You can pack them all together like sardines in a can. When you start to kink the molecule, now you can't do that. Right now you got to do that. So you can't have as many molecules, and it makes it more liquid.
Oh.
That prevents it from being solid at room temperature. Right. So those are the things that you can tell just based on the behavior. Like, is this a solid fat, or is it, you know, or is it a liquid fat?
Huh.
So it's the double bonds, and it's the double bonds that is susceptible to oxidation. So saturated fat, funny enough, has no double bonds. It's not as susceptible to oxygen and light and heat compared to omega-3s, omega-6s, even monounsaturated fatty acids, which is what olive oil is a bunch of, right? Oleic acid.
So it's more stable.
It's more stable. Interesting.
Yeah.
Just based on its chemistry.
Right.
So it's more stable in oxygen, light, heat. And think about it, right? So coconut oil. So what's coconut oil made of? Do you know what kind of fat is it? Is it saturated or unsaturated?
I'm going to guess and say unsaturated.
No, but saturated. It's like saturated. 98% saturated, right?
Really?
It's like the most saturated fat. Here's a nice little, let's put this on. So let's talk about lard for a moment, right? So lard, you can make that in your kitchen, right? I've made lard in my kitchen. You render the fat.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. You give me a face.
I know. I'll buy it, but I don't want to make it.
Well, it's easy. A crock pot. And it's snow white when it comes out, too. Oh, man. I love it. But anyways.
From my macrobiotic days.
Yeah, yeah. I can't go there. I can't go there. So lard. How much of lard is saturated fat, do you think? So you already know coconut oil is 95 or 98%.
Less than 50%.
Yeah, it's like 40%. And you think, oh, lard is like 100% saturated fat.
So,
no.
So that's
fascinating. So it's got unsaturated fats in it.
Yes, that's fascinating. So avocado oil, coconut oil is less stable and more saturated.
No. It's more stable because it's got...
It's more stable. But it has more saturated fat than lard.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, look it up. But it's not. But it doesn't have any cholesterol in it.
Because it's not animal derived.
It's not animal derived. It's got phytosterols in it, not cholesterol in it. So that would be quote unquote a benefit. But it's got a lot of saturated fat. Understand, saturated fat and cholesterol are not the same thing.
Right.
We kind of think about them and we glom them together and say they go with each other, which is true to a point, but they're not the same thing.
Hmm.
So if we're really talking about the cholesterol content in the food, you know, coconut oil gets carte blanche on that, right?
Right.
No problem.
It's a different conversation.
Yeah, but anyway, so 40%. How much saturated fat is in olive oil?
I don't know.
It's like 16%, 16 or 18%. Whoa, wait a minute. There's saturated fat in olive oil? Yes. Most of it's oleic acid, which is a monounsaturated fat, but it's not 100% monounsaturated. It's a mixture.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we find with all these plant fats. They're not just one thing. They're a combination of all these different types of fatty acids. But then we demonize them or praise them based on, well, they're mostly made of this. But again, mostly lard is 40% saturated fat.
Right, right.
Interesting. So getting back to the stability thing, where do coconuts grow?
In the coconut trees.
Where do coconut trees grow?
In hot, hot climates.
In hot, hot climates. So do you think there's more oxidative stress in a hot, hot environment?
I would think so.
Oh, yeah. Lots of heat.
Right.
Yeah.
And light.
And lots of light. So completely different. So actually, the coconut oil is in a surrounding, or it protects itself partly based on the fact that it has more saturated fat. Whether that's an adaptation to the environment or not, I have no idea.
Right.
And flaxseed, where do you find flaxseed? Flaxseed doesn't grow in the tropics. It grows in Canada.
Oh.
Right? It grows in more, you know, colder climates because it's not as stable. It just has more double bonds in it.
Huh.
So, I mean, if we really want to be clear on the oxidative stress thing, it's all about the double bonds. And saturated fat actually is not susceptible that way. Now, I will say there's some research, basically rat studies and things, that say that potentially saturated fat increases inflammatory issues.
But I'm sorry for all the rats that were harmed.
Oh, my goodness.
Those trials.
Yeah, well, lots of rats. Yeah. So this is just about like trying to delve into it a bit to really say, like, what should we be eating? Like, really, are these animal fats bad, or what makes them bad? Is it the saturated fat? Is it the number of double bonds, which are none? Now, it does have arachidonic acid in it, right? So arachidonic acid is an omega-6. That's a pro-inflammatory mediator. right?
Okay. So, not exclusively. I mean, what I'm getting from this is it's good to know your oils, know their flash point or their
smoke point sure, because you'll screw it up in your kitchen.
Yeah. And know your stability and have a variety. I mean, use different things for different things. I mean,
right.
If you're making a bean stew, you could use lard or animal rendered fat. But if you're making a stir fry, coconut oil probably has a higher smoke point.
Nope, it's actually not real high smoke
point.
Oh, it
isn't.
Because they're
okay.
Shorter fats. So then you got to look at the smoke. You got to look at the smoke. The
Which
smoke point
they usually
and
have on the.
Honestly, some refined oils have a much higher smoke point. So there's actually a purpose. There's a use for refined oils. If you're going to use really high temperatures,
mm-hmm.
you want an oil that's not going to oxidize.
Yeah.
And those refined oils may be beneficial.
Like safflower.
Yes, high oleic safflower is what they do. So they deliberately get more oleic acid in it. They make it more stable, and you can use it at real high temperatures. So it's still a refined oil, but you didn't destroy it in your kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you understand it's not as clear cut as we want to make it out to be.
Right. I'm going to take this moment to thank you very much for listening to WDRT 91.9. You're listening to Paul Rattay, the Skeptical Naturopath. On Saturday, April 8th, Paul will continue his year-long Q&A/lecture series at the Commons. Saturday, April 8th, the topic will be toxins. Not all toxins come from the outside world. It begins at 8:30 in the morning until 10. There's a half-hour Q&A followed by an hour-long lecture. This is Paul Rattay's free Obstacles to Cure lecture series.
Great. So let's go back to arachidonic acid.
God bless you.
So that's an...
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
That's an omega-6.
Yes.
Remember, we got omega-3s, we got omega-6s. Right? So arachidonic acid is an omega-6. It's a pro-inflammatory mediator.
Okay.
And what does that mean? That means when the cells are under damage, when a cell is under stress for whatever's going on, it puts out different messages, it puts out different signals. These are called prostaglandins, and they signal the body to say, hey, we want to trigger the inflammatory response, or we want to shut off the inflammatory response.
Mm-hmm.
So think about it. Inflammation is not always a bad guy, right? Inflammation is partly getting your body's immune system involved to say, hey, we got some fix-it work here. We got to repair it. We need to increase we got to do some cleanup work here, right? So this is the kind of the benefit of inflammation. What's the problem is when the inflammation doesn't resolve and it stays, right? It doesn't resolve in the short term. So arachidonic acid is a pro-inflammatory mediator. It mediates inflammation. So we immediately say, oh, it's a bad guy, right? And we find it in animal fats. We really don't find it in plant fats. Now, we can take plant fats, or we can take omega-6s from plants like corn and soy and turn it into arachidonic acid, but that means then the body is going to control that and say, hey, do I need arachidonic acid or do I not need it? Versus if you eat animal fat,
it's just there.
Dairy fat, it's there. It's there. You can't, and you aren't going to really, you can modify it, but you can't turn an omega-3 into an omega-6. You can't turn an omega-6 into omega-3. This is a little biochemistry here, but. So arachidonic acid's a bad guy, right? We look at it as a bad guy. We got to reduce arachidonic acid. And I think that's a benefit of, for example, a vegan diet for for rheumatoid arthritis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I've certainly seen, right?
Yes.
You go on a really low fat diet, you can really help blunt or turn off the inflammatory response.
Yes.
I've seen it.
Macrobiotics is all about that.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Yep. So partly that's based on its effect on arachidonic acid. Let's just get rid of all the arachidonic acid. You don't eat any animals. You don't get any arachidonic acid. No pro-inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You turn it off. But that's kind of interesting. And if we were talk to chemistry people, right, not nutrition people, chemistry people will say, oh, well, you know, here's arachidonic acid. It's got beneficial properties. It's got not so beneficial properties. And actually, arachidonic acid protects the brain from oxidative stress. Bodybuilders use it because it increases the muscle hypertrophy after a workout. And if you want a really good test group, bodybuilders are the best because they will take anything if they think they're going to get more muscle mass. Yes, they'll use arachidonic acid in effect to try to increase muscle hypertrophy. And think of that, muscle hypertrophy. Well, that's a tongue twister.
Yes.
Is an inflammatory response. You go work out and lift weights. there's an inflammatory process that's happening, but then those muscles rebuild at a bigger, you know, they break down and then they build up.
Oh, yeah.
It's what happens.
That's intense.
So arachidonic acid actually mediates that. So is it a good guy or a bad guy?
It well, can I don't be a know. Useful guy,
yeah,
depending
it can be
on
useful,
the,
but right. It can also be detrimental.
Right. Right.
So we got to be careful about just labeling something as a good guy or bad
guy.
To
the N of one.
Yeah, right. And try to say maybe in this framework this isn't beneficial or isn't. And also understand that we really only need an anti-inflammatory response if we have a pro-inflammatory response.
Right. If you already have an issue, then you want to answer it.
Yeah. You don't need to be anti-inflammatory all the time. You need to be anti-inflammatory if you're having a pro-inflammatory response, but understand something's going on that's triggering that inflammatory response. It's not just arachidonic acid's a mediator in that. Yes?
Yes. So we have 10 minutes left, and I have two burning questions, actually. One is, in my 20 years, 25 years of macrobiotic practice, there was literature that said that you could actually create your own oils. If you back off and don't eat any oils, then the body will step up in response to that lack and create its own oils.
That's true to a point,
okay.
But not the essential fatty acids.
Okay.
So you cannot make an omega-3, you cannot make an omega-6.
Okay.
So the word essential means that we have to consume them. But saturated fat, your body can make saturated fat.
It can.
Yes, it can make saturated fat. You don't have to eat it. You can eat it. But your body has all sorts of ability to change things around and make things as needed, that kind of thing. So all the other fatty acids, so oleic acid, which is a monounsaturated fat in olive oil, you can make it. You can make it from a carbohydrate. Body's okay. Really good at taking carbohydrates and turning it into fat.
Okay.
Yeah, right?
Oh,
I mean,
yes, right, right.
Yeah,
now
so
that
we
you
can
say it
that.
Like that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's just those omega-3s and omega-6s we cannot.
Okay.
So we don't have the ability to put that double bond at that position that it's at. It's a third carbon or a sixth carbon, and we don't have the technology, right? Our enzymes don't allow that to happen.
Have you ever done that? Have you ever taken a break completely from oil?
From oil?
Mm-hmm. I'm saying, did you maybe take a break from all oils except for omega-3s and 6s that you maybe took through cod liver oil? Can you get both through cod liver oil, the omegas?
No, you're only going to get cod liver oil. No, cod liver oil is going to provide you omega-3s.
Okay.
So not omega-6s. Plant fats generally are omega-6s.
Okay.
Macrobiotics
are eating a ton of vegetables, right?
Yeah, you're getting some fat, you know, from that. But you're eating nuts and seeds or not?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, so nuts and seeds are going to... So the threes you would get if it's flaxseed oil, the threes are a little bit more difficult.
Okay.
The sixes, if you're eating any kind of nuts or seeds or that kind of thing, you'll easily get the omega-6s.
Okay.
Easily.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. The omega-3s are a little bit more difficult. But you have to consume them. But they could come from a plant. They don't have to come from an animal.
And so you never thought about doing that?
Well, I took fat out of my diet for a period of time. But if you're saying oil, I mean, I sort of do that anyways, right? I mean...
You eat a very low
but
oil.
I'm going to eat lard, right? I'm going to use lard. I'm going to use butter.
Right.
So that's not necessarily refined vegetable oil.
Right.
Whereas I can easily get away with... I mean, I use olive oil, but it's not like I use a ton of olive oil. It's like the whole mayonnaise thing. When we talk about this, like mayonnaise just scares me.
Right.
I mean, it just does.
What
it's made from. But I deliberately keep my seed oil consumption down. But I use coconut oil. I use olive oil. And I use avocado oil. And I think I've been conned on the olive oil too. On the avocado oil. I'm really looking for extra virgin avocado oil. And it's this fancy company that I get, right? It's in this fancy tin. But I've been conned because they have an extra virgin one, and then they just have another one that's not called extra virgin. And it says it's made with extra virgin avocado oil. But the problem is it's not all extra virgin avocado
oil. It's an amalgam.
It's an amalgam. Mm-hmm. Oh, I got tricked.
Until you finish it, and then you can buy the real one.
Yeah,
again.
Right. So I deliberately try to stay away from those. But I'm at the point that I'd rather eat an old fat rather than a new fat. And understand, if we're looking at the quality of any oil, if it's an animal fat, we have to pay attention to what the animal ate.
Right.
So the animal's eating a bunch of corn, a bunch of soy, it's going to change your fatty acid content. You're going to get more arachidonic acid versus a grass-fed animal that's grass-fed, whether it's exclusively or mostly whatever, you're going to get more omega-3s. So now this is based on what that animal was eating.
important background
information. Very important, right? Whereas the plant fats, maybe not so much. Maybe there's quality issues if it's, you know, GMO, but I don't know that that necessarily changes the fat content. Yes.
And can we change, or I mean, can we trust all the packaging that says grass-fed? Do you have any biases?
I don't know that that means anything. Right. I don't know what the definition. Organic has a definition.
Mm-hmm.
Grass-fed, I don't know that we have a definition.
Okay.
So we'll use it as a label, but I don't know that it's enforceable. Like we would go to the farmer and say, you can't say that. Whereas organic, if you're not following the rules, there's a problem there. But you know your farmer, right? If you ask your farmer, I mean, that's how you want to localize it as much as possible to kind of get a sense of what are they doing.
So my second question is there a spiritual component to food? Of course, I'm cheating because these are on your notes, but I wanted to get to it.
So yeah, this is the thing. When we talk about this, as much as I say, I think these old fats is what I consume, but I also think that plant fats have more, I don't know what we want to call it, energy, right? More forces in them because they're more connected to the planet and the sun, right? They're more of the earth, whereas an animal is going to eat that plant. So the fat in the animal is coming from what they ate and what they converted, and now they're changing it a little bit, right? And they change it, and then we get cholesterol. So that's part and parcel of what happens when an animal starts to eat a, let's call it a phytosterol, right, which is what we find in a plant. So the animal eats it and converts it into something, and it's further along. It's not in its more kind of native, natural state. Perhaps, yes. So
yeah.
Eating extra virgin olive oil may be completely different than another oil that's been really heavily refined, and we've had to process that, right? So I'm just worried that refinement kind of doesn't allow that to happen, right? So we would really like these raw, unrefined, quote-unquote cold-pressed, right, extra virgin oils that I do think that there's more spiritual forces in them than that we get in animal fats. So yeah, I I'm not against that. It's just like, but what would those fats be? What would those oils be? Olive oil, coconut oil, things that you could make in your kitchen, right? So you would take the plant and then you'd convert it into something that you'd use to cook with or whatever.
Okay.
So, or just maybe just eat the plants, right? Just eat the nuts and the seeds and this kind of thing, right? Why are we always having to extract things from it?
True.
Or do we just put it in a complex that we cook it in a way that we're able to utilize those things from it and not just isolate it and then take it because that's more convenient and we put it in mayonnaise? Right? I mean, we would have been eating the whole plant. I think that's part of the problem too, is that we've isolated and reduced and, you know, we've
fractionated.
We fractionated, and we argue about omega-3s and omega-6s instead of, or arguing about animal fats and plant fats instead of, you know, well, what's a quality fat versus a not so good quality fat? But that's open for debate, right? Because some people would say, well, that's a high quality fat because it doesn't have saturated fat. I'd be like, well, no, how is it raised? How is it processed? Where did it grow? Right? Those are the things that are really important on this. And it's, you know, starting to ask those questions and have a, you know what to look for on that, right?
Yeah. I mean, really, this is a lot of background information that most of us aren't privy to.
Right.
You know, I mean.
So maybe I end with a few kind of take-home points,
sure.
Right? So things you can do. Mm-hmm. So one thing is if you eat out.
Yes.
So if you eat out, and I don't practice this, so I'm being a hypocrite here. But I certainly think about it. But if you eat out, it's like, wow, I'm going to eat out vegan, right? Because I can't trust the animal source if I'm going somewhere. I mean, maybe the Driftless Cafe, right? But generally speaking, I go to a Thai restaurant because I love Thai food. I mean, the chicken that I'm getting at the Thai restaurant. And then what about the fat content? You know, the oils that they use to make that curry? I'm telling you, they're not using a good quality oil. I mean, I guess I could
back
say, hey.
Back to the profit. I mean, not
exactly,
to, yeah,
right?
It's so, not really a character assassination. It's
yeah, it's just what they use, right? And so the idea is just don't be blind to that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you go out and you eat low-fat vegan. But at home, where you're in control of that, that's, you know, that's another thing, right? The other one is, what are the do-it-yourself fats, right? That's butter, that's lard. Those are things you can make in your kitchen. I'm telling you, lard.
I know. You'll have to run it by me.
Yeah, and you don't
exactly
need very much lard either, right? But it's just another way to get je ne sais quoi on food, right? That's just what I find.
Mm-hmm.
Don't overheat your oil. We kind of talked about that. Yes?
Yes.
Yeah, so be really conscious of the smoke point and be aware of that. And if it smokes, throw it away and start over.
Yes.
Actually, heat the pan first before you put the oil in there. Because you can smoke almost any fat if you keep it under heat under a long enough period of time. Right? The whole idea is you're not going to be doing it for a long term. So heat the pan first, then put the oil in, and then cook. And then really just focus on unrefined extra virgin oils as much as possible. That's really not, doesn't apply to animal fats, but, you know, certainly these plant fats that we talked about. So.
Perfect. Perfect timing. Thank you so much, Paul. You're listening to WDRT 91.9. I'm here with Paul Rittay, the Skeptical Naturopath.